Hello again. Welcome back to camp. Not much of a fire tonight, as it's nearly 80 degrees after sundown. But I have a few things smoldering in an old coffee can to keep down the biting insects. By the heat, you may have gathered that we are near the equator. Camp today is on the eastern shore of Lake Volta, under an African mahogany in southwestern Ghana. Here the land is divided into savanna and woodlands that are evergreen, and the Volta waterways are home to crocodiles and hippopotamus and even manatees. The woodlands are full of little sacred potus monkeys, and notably the world's largest species of terrestrial snail, which can reach up to 30 centimeters in length and is a primary food source here. The people here speak many different languages and regional dialects. English is spoken as a leftover of colonialism, and the most common indigenous language is Akan, which is also the name of the group of peoples whose folklore dominates this region. After dark, which is wrapping around our little camp, we'll see fruit bats, and if we're lucky, perhaps a shambling aardvark looking for ants, or a civet. We might hear the calls of nightjars. The stories of the Akan are full of powerful spirits, great heroes, tricksters like the clever Anansi, who freed all the stories to fly among human beings, and of course, with ghosts and monsters. Look around at the darkening forest. The canopy is thick, and the shadows are quickly knitting together into one dense black coverlet. This place is shadowy enough during the day. At night, it's almost impenetrable. A perfect place for vampires. And I'm not talking about the sexy, silk-suited vampires that Hollywood made famous. When you go back, most cultures have blood-sucking monsters to contend with, and most of the time, they are as hideous as they are dangerous. There is the Obaifo, which can be identified by the nasty green lights emanating from its armpits and anus. There is also the shape-shifting Adzi, from a bit further east in Togo, who lures little children by turning into a firefly, and not only drinks their blood, but devours their livers and their hearts. But there is a creature I want to talk to you about tonight, because it shares a very specific trait with at least two of my other favorite nightly antagonists. I'll get to that in a minute. For now, I'll give you a general description, but it'll be more interesting, perhaps, if I give it to you as a story. Imagine a young woman out hunting for those giant snails to feed her family. She's gotten far separated from her party. It's getting late, and she is finally turning back to her home after a long trek into the forest. The open season for snails was just announced, and she has been out for hours looking for the choicest new specimens of the year. She's had a hard day and is very tired. She's so sleepy now. She starts dreaming even as she walks the familiar old trail of the comforts she will soon feel at home. The gentle faces in the dim light, the hushed voices of the old folks, finally, the chance to sit her sore body down and process her harvest. There's a rustle above her head that jolts her out of this pleasant dream. Something about it just wasn't right. And she scolds herself for letting her mind wander in the forest at dusk, no matter how familiar. This is exactly the kind of thing that gets one into trouble out here. The rustling gets louder, and it's obviously something big. A terrible feeling of being watched settles on her, and she feels a tingle run up her spine as the branches above her head begin to creak as under some great weight. There's so little light. Any move could be risky. But she crouches down and feels along the damp forest floor until she finds a good-sized stone. She straightens up and lifts her hand holding the rock, listening carefully. Everything is quiet, and she takes a few steps further on her way, trying to stay silent. One step, two steps, three. On the fourth step, she feels big, hairy hands clamp around her neck. Her bag of snails clatters on the ground as she's lifted up, up, and up. A face is close to hers now. She can feel and smell its nasty breath. Hard, cold things like fangs push along her cheek, searching for her throat. She swings the stone wildly at the thing near her face and hears a sharp clang, like stone on metal. She swings again, and this time hits the side of a hairy, greasy head. Immediately, she's falling and hits the ground. She's pretty sure her leg is hurt, but is far too scared to care. She breaks for the tiny lights of her home in the distance, running as fast as she possibly can. As she runs, she casts a look behind her, and just barely sees the outline of a huge form with long arms and legs swinging off through the trees. It's swinging, however, by its legs. Left, right, left, right, like it's walking upside down. She makes it home at last to safety, shaking and traumatized by her encounter with the Asanbosam. It's a creature with hooks for feet and long, shaggy hair that menaces hunters and travelers in the woodlands of Togo, Ghana, and the Ivory Coast. Some say it strangles you with its hooked feet or its hairy hands, but always it strikes from above, seeking to drink human blood by piercing the neck with its huge iron teeth. There's something scary about those two words put together, iron teeth. It invokes images of some ultimate, unstoppable predator. Lucky for our young heroine, she gave it the slip. But only, it seems, by luck. Maybe she reacted just in time when the creature was pretty sure it had her and dropped its guard. Or maybe it wasn't all that hungry tonight. But just sit with those words for a few seconds. Iron teeth. What do you see? A person with big rusty metal dentures turning their smile on you? A giant with great metal pegs for teeth that crunches up the bones and meat of its victims all in one. I'm sure there's not much that comes to mind that isn't, on some level, unpleasant. It turns out that people contributing to the folklore outside of West Africa feel much the same about those two words put together. Have you ever heard the old Scottish rhyme, Jenny with the iron teeth? What a plague is this o' mine, when a stick is ye? Though I hap him o'er the head, as cozy as can be, sleep and let me to my work, and the clay's to earn. Jenny with the iron teeth, come and take the bairn. Take him to your ain den, where the bogey bides. But first put baith your big teeth in his wee plump sides. Jenny with the iron teeth is written for a broad Scottish accent, so I recommend listening to it in its entirety at Scottish Stories for Telling on YouTube, where it's read properly. Stay in bed and keep quiet, wee bairns, or Jenny with the iron teeth will take you away to her den where monsters dwell and use her iron teeth to quiet you before you become her dinner. It's a poem from the late 19th century by Alexander Anderson, and it may have contributed to several mysterious incidents around Scotland in the 1950s, when bands of children began roving graveyards armed with everything they could find, claiming to be hunting a vampire with iron teeth. Some authorities wanted to pin the blame on the modern imported horror comics from America and called for a nationwide ban on such inappropriate reading for children. But just as likely, the fear was started by things much older and fiercer than anything these early imports were supplying. Anderson's poem may have been partly inspired by creatures from the British Isles, such as Black Annis, a cannibal with iron claws. Another famous lady of nocturnal and cannibalistic habits comes to mind. Far from Ghana and far from Scotland, Baba Yaga made her home in the deep forests of Eastern Europe and Russia. Her surreal house on chicken legs was surrounded by an enchanted fence of human bones, and she might be helpful if you said the right words, minded your manners, and arrived when she wasn't too hungry. Otherwise, she'd use her iron teeth to grind and gobble you up, bones and all. So intriguing to find these similar details in folklore from different places. The British Isles and the lands that now make up the Republic of Ghana are connected by English colonialism, which lasted until independence in 1957, but it's not clear whether this is a connection that influences these pieces of folklore. Of course, we're all human. We all probably have similar reactions to the idea of teeth, those parts of predators we fear and perhaps also admire the most, that we might see flashing in the shadows at night. If not in literal forests, then certainly in our nightmares. Other things that flash in the night, fireflies and phantom lights, stars, comets, and the great face of the moon, also feature heavily in the more uncomfortable corners of human folklore. Metal, both for what it can be made into and for its own intrinsic properties, also features heavily. Iron itself, both from earthly sources and from meteor strikes, is believed in many places to keep away evil spirits, witches, or fairies, or to be the ideal substance for sacred tools. I imagine some people listening have probably used small iron objects like horseshoes, coffin nails, and iron knives for various practices. Iron can be obtained from an abundance of naturally occurring iron ore deposits if you can get it hot enough, and is incredibly strong compared to bronze, which made our earliest known metal weapons and tools before technology advanced sufficiently to make hotter and more reliable kilns for smelting. Iron always came with those magnificent and mysterious magnetic properties, and when polished, it shines like a mirror, or like teeth in the moonlight. Iron has been with us for much longer than smelting, however. long before we started to wonder what was in the rocks beneath our feet. Long before we were even human. Iron is an essential component of hemoglobin, which transports oxygen in the blood of vertebrate animals. It's quite literally in our blood and in the lifeblood of our stories, so many of which involve violent conflict. Iron meets iron in so many human stories, with legendary weapons clanging against one another in the hands of legendary foes. Iron teeth seek out the taste of blood made rich by iron. This has been a production of A Walk in the Dark for the Ancient Voices podcast, with music by Coag at co.ag on YouTube, licensed under Creative Commons. I'm your storyteller, Amanda Newsome.